Again, Jesus left the district of Tyre and went by way of Sidon to the Sea of Galilee, into the district of the Decapolis. And people brought to him a deaf man who had a speech impediment and begged him to lay his hand on him. He took him off by himself, away from the crowd. He put his finger into the man's ears and spitting touched his tongue. And he looked up into heaven and groaned and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." And immediately the man's ears were opened, his speech impediment was removed, and he spoke plainly. He ordered them not to tell anyone, but the more he ordered them not to, the more they proclaimed it. They were exceedingly astonished, and they said, "He has done all things well. He makes the deaf hear and the mute speak." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. We have this, so many healings that happen in the gospel, and sometimes it just gets a general reference. And Jesus healed many people and cast out many demons. And that's all we hear. Every once in a while, we get a more in-depth description of what actually took place, even to the exact word that Jesus used in Aramaic, "Ephphatha," from the actual incident. And so I think this is an invitation that for us to delve into it, meditate it, contemplate it, the scene, what it would have been like, because we have these details to work with. And so what I'd like to do is a little bit of that here this morning with this particular miracle, and then draw some conclusions for that. We have this gentleman here that is deaf and mute. Here it says speech impediment, the way it's translated in English here, but in other translations, you see it's more than just, it's not like he just had a strong lisp or something like that. No, this was a major inability to communicate, because for one, he's deaf, so he can't hear so as to know what it's supposed to sound like, and then what little he's able to try to communicate just doesn't work. And so basically he is in a silent bubble of inability to communicate. And that would have been obviously would cause problems for him to have any kind of an education, probably not married, probably doesn't have kids, because he's deficient in some way, what's the way they would have looked at it at the time. And even to the point of like, well, obviously either he sinned or someone in his family sinned, and that's why he's got this disability. Now we know that's not the case, and Jesus shows that later. But so when Jesus comes through this part of the area called the Decapolis, it's on the eastern side of the Jordan. This is a place that Jesus only visited like twice before, and it was for real brief visits. Once he comes in, casts out a demon, and has to leave immediately because the people just got really freaked out by the situation, and so he left. And so it wasn't like everybody there would know who this was and would have seen him a lot or something like back in Nazareth or something like that where he grew up. And so it's not too much of a stretch, and this is my own theory here, not too much of a stretch to think that this deaf and mute man probably doesn't know who Jesus is. Who's going to tell him about the miracles? You can do something with hand gestures, but he's going to think, yeah, this guy, they're pulling my leg. They're maybe at best. And so he hasn't heard about his teachings. He hasn't heard about the Sermon on the Mount. He hasn't heard about the multiplication of the loaves and all these other miracles, but other people have. And so Jesus comes through to this area, and he is whatever his ordinary life would have looked like, those people who helped take care of him, friends, family. Here the gospel doesn't say, it just says some people came and brought him to Jesus. Well, these people obviously are probably friends, family, or the neighbors that know his situation and know what Jesus can do for him. Now, how are they going to explain to him why he should come with them in that moment? Well, they can't. At least not in the way that they can't just tell him. And so he's going to be seeing something probably very different in their faces of why, with this urgency, they want him to come right now. And it's not danger he's going to read on their face. It's not worry or concern. It's like their eyes are going to be as big as saucers, and like, this is it. This could happen for him. But he doesn't know. He just sees this excitement, this wonder, this openness, and he knows he can trust it. I don't know if you've ever been in a country where you don't know the language or trying to communicate with someone where there's a language barrier, but you can just tell by their face what they're trying to say, that you go along with it. You're going to be okay. That's probably something what he read in their faces. So they're taking him somewhere. He doesn't know why or for what, but he's trusting it. And they bring him before this man. Maybe they're somehow able to sign language his name or something like that, but there's been a lot written about what Jesus would have actually looked like. And any, as good as someone like Jonathan Rumi in The Chosen, or Caviezel in The Passion, as good as they portray it, they're going to fall short. I mean, it's guaranteed. Like, how do you play Jesus? Well, good luck with that. But what's often said about what he would have looked like, just contemplating that, is there would have been a dignity that would have just been far greater than anybody else anyone had ever laid eyes on. A goodness that just exuded from his person, his visage, the way he carried himself, the way he made eye contact with the people around him, the way, in another place in the gospel, it says that he, and another individual said, he looked at him and loved him. And so this man brought, thrust, maybe, before Jesus, all of a sudden has somebody looking at him the way nobody has ever looked at him before. Now, the people, these friends, are begging Jesus to lay his hands on them. And for sure, he would have done that in many other occasions, right there in the midst of the whole crowd, just one after another after another. But Jesus does something different here. He takes the man apart, aside, by himself. And it's like, we're going to leave the crowd behind. This doesn't have to do with them. This has to do with you. I don't want them to be mixed up in this in any way that you might think that this is somehow more about them and not so much about you. Jesus didn't do party tricks. Ladies and gentlemen, watch this. That's not how what it would have been like for anybody. And for some reason, in this particular one, he wanted to make really extra sure that nobody viewed it that way. So he takes him off by himself. And then we have these details in here that are just, in a certain way, strange, but I think we can make some kind of sense to it. So Jesus knows what the issue is. They probably either told him or he just knew because he's Jesus. And Jesus places his fingers in the man's ears, touches his tongue, spits, and says this word in Aramaic, Ephphatha. I bet that man never forgot that word. What that sound, or I don't know if he heard it or not, because did the miracle take place before? I don't know, that's the over-analysis there. But could have been disorienting to this gentleman to have this, but he's going to trust it, just like he trusted his friends to bring him to Jesus. He sees Jesus, and when Jesus reaches out to touch him, he knows he has nothing to fear. Because there's this dignity that not just Jesus has, but there's this dignity with the way Jesus is handling him, reaching out to him. I don't know if you've ever had a nurse or a doctor treat you with exquisite dignity. It's amazing. It's beautiful. I mean, there's plenty of examples to the contrary, and they can be forgiven for that and the fact that they're doing this all day long and they have normal lives like the rest of us. But what, every once in a while, a doctor, I remember one particular one, I mean, I felt like I was more dignified leaving the office than when I walked in, because it was just this, and I wasn't even a priest at the time, so I wasn't getting any like special treatment. I was just who he was. And so there must have been some of that happening with the way Jesus was reaching out to place his fingers in this man's ears. There's people that give testimonies today of different healings, cures, charismatic events, things like that. Those things still happen today. There's a gentleman that came into the church at Easter time, had his shoulder healed with a relic. And he said he just felt warmth all over right in that place. And like he immediately knew and could feel it in his very flesh that he was healed. And indeed he was. He really was. He had like a really messed up rotator cuff or something like that. So when Jesus reaches out, places his hands on his head, the finger in his ears, is reaching out to touch his tongue. There must have been some physical sensation that just shot through his whole body, especially around his head and his ears, that all of a sudden it just as Jesus is saying the word Ephphatha, that just his openness comes into his, something breaks loose, something starts to, his tongue, he's able to speak, he's able to hear. You might have seen on there's YouTube videos of when people have those ear implants, turned on for the first time, and they can hear. Maybe they can hear vaguely as if through a pillow, through just the resonance in their own skull, but then when they have these things turned on, all of a sudden they can hear clearly. And a lot of times, at least the ones that make it to the internet, they just begin to weep. Because it's just such an impacting thing to, like all my life I haven't been able to hear, or since I was a child I haven't been able to hear, and I can speak clearly now. And what's this gentleman do? They say they're praising God. And it would have been just completely overwhelming for this man. And it's the people that brought him here, as soon as he brings him back and this man's speaking now for the first time, and the reaction of those that brought him, they would have been just completely astounded, amazed, even though they knew that this is why they were bringing him there. They're expecting it in a certain way or hoping for it, yet to actually see it real. He's speaking, he's talking. He can hear us now. He can hear everyone. Completely overwhelming. And as quickly as a gospel passage like this passes by, how many tears would have been shed all week long? And in other moments, remembering that day when I could hear again. Remembering that day when I first could tell my parents, I love you. Or these people, thank you. I want to highlight this dignity with which Jesus, not just the way he handled him, but with him as a person. This respect, and in a certain way, you could almost say a reverence that God has towards every one of us. Because we're all his creation, we're all his creatures, and he creates every one of us out of love and wants only the best for us. And the way he would approach us with his great desires for joy, happiness. We know we're created for eternity. Now, as we all know, he doesn't do these kinds of miracles for everyone, and I've preached plenty of times about that. There's this decaying process of our bodies when they tend to wear out, and then our souls depart from our body, but it's not like our body is just like a something that we put on. Like, we're a soul and we got this body, we kind of have on like a shirt, then we take it off and go to heaven. No, it's your body is, we're body soul. It's like you are just as much your body as you are your soul. It's all you. And it's an unnatural thing that they split apart. And our Lord is treating the body with the same dignity that he wants to treat you, that he treats their souls, the same kind of healing he wants to give their souls, he gives to the body, and vice versa. And so there's this inherent dignity that we all have with our human body, because it's us. This human body is something that the Eucharist wants to come into, not just your soul. And so it matters what we do with our body. It matters, just as you wouldn't just do any old thing with your soul, you wouldn't do just any old thing with your body. Just like we wouldn't do any old thing with a chalice we use at Mass, even if it's worn out and no longer able to be used at Mass. You wouldn't just throw it away. You wouldn't just stick it in the cupboard and use it for dinner. The same with our body. It's got that kind of dignity. Now, there's certain cultures that have fostered or cultivated this respect for the dignity of the human body more so than others. I'm not saying some are necessarily better than others in some ways, but this is at least one aspect where some of that is really important to them. Or maybe even generationally, you can see it, that there's this respect and dignity of reverence for the body and the goodness of it and how you treat it, that it's not indifferent, and that there's a moral side of it too. There's meaning and significance behind what we do with our body. That's what all John Paul II's theology of the body is all about, that. And based on that fundamental point of the dignity of our bodies and how we use it is communicating things. It's also community. It's also comes back on us too, as we ourselves use it for things that are dignified or undignified. The church fathers saw this as well, that even back to St. Augustine would talk about this, these miracles that he's working, healing the body, is showing us what he wants to do with the soul as well, and vice versa. Origen as well talked about it too. So I just want to encourage you to give that some thought, and maybe even give that some prayer. I'm going to mention something in the announcements too about that has to do with this, with the human dignity and the dignity of the body, but that'll save that for the announcement at the end. But it's not indifferent. It's absolutely not indifferent. So how do I treat myself? How do I treat the dignity of the people around me, their soul, their body? Am I like this nurse or doctor where someone comes to me and they actually feel elevated in some way, respected, regardless of the condition of their body walking in there, regardless of the condition of their soul walking in there? This is Christianity applied. And it makes an absolute amazing difference. There's Christians in the early church that got martyred, not because they confessed to being Christian, but because other people could just tell. Because the way they treated other people. You must be a Christian. I know, look how good you are. I know, you're a Christian, aren't you? Obviously, we're not in those kinds of times. We can use that as a positive, not just like, oh boy, I better dial it back. Someone might call me out as being a Christian and I'll get killed. At least not today, not here. So take it to heart. How do I treat my own body? What dignity do I give it and others? And elevate it. Let your imagination go. Imagine how would Jesus be doing this? And that's in a certain way how we are to model our behavior and the attitudes that we foster towards one another.